Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The HIV epidemic is not over. HIV is still here.
The face of HIV is so diverse.
The biggest thing to reduce HIV stigma is just to talk about it. Testing and PrEP and HIV treatment and how effective it is today.
Undetectable equals untransmittable. Whether you're positive or negative, there's not a wrong door. Whether it's testing or whether it's treatment, do it for you, Montgomery County.
Learn more about HIV testing, treatment, and prevention at doitforyoumc.org.
Hey everyone, Scott Hansen here from NFL Red Zone. I hope you're checking out 1 hour of 5 Yard Rush, one of the best podcasts on NFL football in the UK.
Yo, what's happening, Rush Nation? It's Murph here. There is no Stocks this week. Stocks has got caught up in a bit of a work situation slash emergency slash earning those pennies. And so as a result, I'm here in the hot seat. But as always, not alone. I've brought with me two phenomenal guests who I'm really excited to have on this week. We've been planning this for a little bit. So joined with me is the brains and the beauty, and I'll let either of you decide how you want to hash that one up, behind the Warrior Bowl. It's Greg and Foley. How are you doing, guys? Welcome to 5 Yard Rush.
Thanks, mate. I'll be the brains and the beauty. Greg, what does that leave you?
Just, you know.
The money.
Yeah, that'll be it.
The
ideas man, the hype
man. The admin guy.
The admin guy. You're basically admin. I'll do sales, I'll do the sexy stuff, and you do the admin.
I'll do the work.
Well, gents, it's a pleasure to have you on. We'll get into the Warrior Bowl and what it's about, but got to know you both over the last year, and really glad we can have you on, not just to talk about the Warrior Bowl and tell some folks about what it is and how they can get involved, but also some of the great things that you were able to do, and just get to know the faces behind it and the beauty and the brains and the admin.
And the admin.
So gents, first things first, let's just sort of digress for a second. Did you enjoy the NFL draft? Did Santa draft clause come across and give you what you wanted down the chimney?
Go on, Greg. As a Giants fan, you've actually got a little bit more to talk about than I do. Amazing.
Well, it started off all right. I like the trade back, but
well, after you lost Devonta Smith.
Yeah. To be honest, I was talking to Foley about this the other day. I'm not that fussed about Smith going and missing out on Smith. I wasn't too worried about that, because to be perfectly honest, I'd rather they hadn't picked a wide receiver anyway. But yeah, to take Tony where they did, having done so well to trade back and get himself a nice little haul, Tony coming out as the name.
Is that the first time Gettleman's ever traded back?
In the first round, yeah.
Yeah, and then he takes Tony. Good job.
Which he reached. He managed to trade back and reach at the same time. I don't think anyone has ever done that before.
That's great work.
Yeah, it was going so well. for those 10 picks, we were off the clock, and then, yeah.
I felt like a proud father when I watched him trade back. I was like, where are you going, man? Where are you going? You figured it out. It only took COVID and everything else for you to figure it out, and he did it.
And then he screwed it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was like, normal service has been resumed. Good.
Yeah. As a Saints fan, drafts are just a bit like, yeah, I'll just watch everyone else have fun while we get a couple of, like, you know, defensive players that don't really do much and see what happens.
I thought it was really cool that you decided to take the exact same defensive end after you took Harvard's Davenport. It's like literally, if you could just take a guy, cut him out, and make him exactly the same, that is what you've just done.
Can we get a guy who looks like he should be good but isn't? But this time, we don't pay loads of money for him. We just pay a little bit of money for him. Good job.
We still spent the first round pick.
And we really need a wide receiver. Let's wait till round seven.
But we've got to make sure we get Ian Book first, because what we need is another one of those hybrid quarterback tight ends, because we've only got one of them on the roster.
We need a poor man's Taysom Hill. Yeah, that's what we need. Jesus. Yeah, so Saints draft are a bit miserable, aren't they?
I don't really know what Mickey Loomis does. I think he just like gets bored and he just picks names and everything.
Just
I mean,
does something for fun, yeah.
I mean, to be honest, I think all three of our teams didn't have overly exciting draft. I mean, with the Bucks, it was never going to be exciting. When you sign back all 22 starters, you're not really expecting there to be like a guy and go, oh my God, this is amazing. But
you don't need a good draft.
No, I think we had a good one for what it is. I really like Joe Tryon. I think he's a good player.
Yeah.
Edge, you could always get the best time to get an edge is when you don't need one. Same with the quarterback. The two positions you really need to have depth in. I like that. I like Trask. I'll see if he fits or not. I mean, if he doesn't really matter. I mean, we've drafted kickers in the second round before. So, you know, if it doesn't pan out, not a big deal. And I like the interior guy. And I liked, I really love Jalen Darden. Like, that kid is.
I'm excited
for him. So, I was quite happy. But yeah, I mean, like, we're talking about depth and special teams guys. We're not talking about, like,
that's the champs. You know, if you're the champ, you can do that, right? It's all luxury picks.
Yeah, especially when you've got the guys in the building and you're in a 2-year window, so make the most of it. But look, didn't bring you on. We'll come back to the draft. We'll come back to some of our favorite picks and shocks. But let's talk a little bit about the Warrior Bowl, because you guys kicked this off last year. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what it is, why did you do it, and what made you kind of want to start the Warrior Bowl?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, in its simplest, it's just it's a massive charity fantasy league. So, it came about around this time last year, really. So, after the NFL draft, Foley and I and a couple of other people were doing some startup drafts. And so, we're starting to get the buzz around the upcoming season. All the Scott Fish Bowl invites were all going out. So, there's a load of buzz around that. And obviously, we're in the middle of lockdown. Little did we know at that point we'd spend the most of the year in lockdown. But at that point, we were in lockdown and it was still relatively novel at that point. So, all that sort of buzz was going on. But at the same time, we were sort of the backdrop in the UK, at least, was that we're in lockdown. There's loads of charities that are going to be sort of missing out on fundraising. If you think of all the events that got cancelled over the last 12 months there. If you just think the London Marathon, how much money must millions get raised for charities through the London Marathon, or the small little independent charities that were going to lose out. So we thought, well, could we do something? Could we put something together like a charity league to try and raise some money for some sort of smaller local charities here in the UK? And for some bizarre reason, I came up with the idea of 240 people. That seems like an achievable task, despite the fact I'm not on Twitter. I've never played in a league with more than 12 people. And so, 240 people, 20 quid a head, £5,000. That seems like a good starting point.
Are you drunk? I never asked you that before. Were you drunk? It sounds like you were drunk.
It does sound like one of those sort of pub ideas that you have a few pints in. But no, so I kind of came up with the idea, texted a few people and just sort of said, I've had this idea. Do you think this is mental? Or do you think we've got a chance of doing it? And it just went from there. So, ended up
snowballed.
It was snowballed from there, really being this big league. So we had 240 people from 22 different countries on 6 continents, all sort of fans and analysts from all around the world, really, all sort of coming together, playing, donating. All the 100% of the proceeds go to charity. We had some prizes and things like that, all of which were donated very generously by people within the community. You guys, exactly. And that's the main reason it got to where it got to is just because of the generosity of the community. community, really. We just kind of jumped on Twitter, no followers, set up a new account and just put stuff out there, spoke to people, said, please retweet our stuff, please sign up, please consider like helping us out. And they did. And yeah, that's how it grew to the size that it grew so quickly. So,
It's amazing. And yeah, you speak to people. I mean, I was blessed enough to participate. You gave me a spot, which I'm forever grateful. And I was one half of football away from winning the whole thing.
You're not bitter.
No, I mean, listen, the way I look at it is it's always better to be second in those things. Because, you know, once you've won it, that's it, you're doomed. You can't win it again. So what I want to do is come second and like third and then win it and then be doomed not to do anything. And then I'll be the only person to have all three podium places. That's how I kind of view it. So I've knocked one of the three down. You know, I'm going to go for third this year. And then the plan is to win it in year three. And then
you just want that big Hollywood journeyman story, don't you?
Yeah. He wants the movie deal.
Yeah, I just want to be like forever Mr. Warrior Bowl, three-time podium finish. I'll be like those guys who like the FPL who count that they're in the top 1% or something, and they just count those finishes. That's kind
of it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. It's going to be double the size. Ah.
Bring it on, man. Bring it on. Last year was the warm-up. It was fine.
Yeah.
Let's just get my eye in. No. It was a phenomenal tournament. There's some great people. And in terms of what I loved about it is that people really embraced it. You know, I play in a lot of different leagues and charity leagues and all these sorts of things. But I think what made your tournament really special was people set up draft groups, people set up Twitter groups.
Yeah.
The banter in the you set up a finalist group was second to none. And we've ended up building a league off the back of doing that, which was really cool. And I think there's a lot of good friendships and partnerships and contributions as a result have come as a result. And that's the spirit of these sorts of leagues. Is it's all good and dandy to just do a league and put one together, but it's another to form those friendships. And I always say that's kind of the purpose of all this. You know, I've met some of my best friends in fantasy football playing in the Scottish Bowl or playing in a tournament like yours. So it's amazing what you do. Why is the Warrior Bowl? I mean, I've sort of said this a little bit about why it's different, but why do you guys think it's so different to some of those other tournaments out there?
My videos, you're right. Yeah. I mean, Greg, you're right. It's my videos. You're spot on. Yeah. It's the 1980s, 1990s nostalgic feel. That's what it is. Actually, it might be that, you know, it's that nostalgia, isn't it?
It is a little bit. I love it. I've even got on here that sort of the next point was to talk about your hype video. So while we're on it and you've jumped it, let's get straight into it. What is the, you know, what can we expect in 2021? Are we going to keep the 80s theme? Are you going to keep it to a theme?
I don't know.
More like retro films, or they did dip into the 70s with Star Wars for the finalists.
So yeah, 80s. That's true, actually. It came naturally. It was a misspent youth put to good use.
Yeah.
I watched that. You know what I mean? You spend years and years and years watching those films and you think, will this ever pay off professionally? And then all of a sudden it does. Fabulous. So I've absolutely no idea. I mean, what do you suggest? Any suggestions? Open to suggestions.
What I would love, personally,
go on,
retro video game montages.
Write that down.
Like your Mario's, Mario Kart's, GoldenEye. Mm. GoldenEye would be a phenomenal one to do with
the Division.
Look, we're just spitballing ideas here. I think
that's a great show, actually. Yeah, or a Mario Kart, actually, going around the tracks at Rainbow
Mario
Road.
Mario Kart would be good. Yeah. Even things like Doom, Duke Nukem.
Yeah.
Turok. I mean, I love Turok. I mean, I'm one of the few that do. Super Smash Bros. God, you got loads.
Yeah. That's a good shout.
The thing with the videos was we never really planned for them to be a thing. It was just
an excuse to watch YouTube videos when the missus couldn't shout at me because I'm working.
Like right at the very start, we're like, and I remember really sort of early doors when we were sort of putting this all together, and I'd spoke to a few people, and I'm pretty sure that this conversation I had with you, Murph, and we'd said about the league and what we're trying to do and stuff like that, and you'd said obviously you play in a lot of these leagues, and the ones that are the best ones aren't necessarily the biggest, but are the ones that are the most interesting because either they have something unique about the the scoring or the format or something like that, or the experience and the community that it generates. So we were trying to think about that. You know, what could we try and do to be a bit different, to make it stand out, primarily in the first place, just to try and drive some signups, because we were desperate for signups at the start. So we thought, oh, we'll do a video. And I think the first sort of like that hype video that I did at the start,
Dropkick
we
Murphys
put that out. Yeah, the Dropkick Murphys one, which is all had like football, all little big hits and things like that and stuff and some clips in it. And that went down really well. So it's all right, we'll do another one. And we did one for the draft day. And we did one for the start of the season and that sort of stuff. And it just progressed into actually people seemed to like them. It became a bit of a thing. Foley got involved with them after that and started doing some of the ones through the season. So pretty much anything that's got football in it is the ones that I do. And anything that's got 80s films or something like that is the one that Foley's done. So it's easy to tell them apart. But yeah, it kind of became a little bit of a sort of a USP kind of thing and tried to try and build that community, as you mentioned, and that sort of people wanting to be a part of the Worry Bowl and enjoying it. So yeah, it grew way beyond what we thought the original plan was with regards to the videos. But.
Which is just an occasional kind of NFL people hitting each other video. Then it became Rocky versus Karate Kid and went from there.
Exactly.
It was so great. And as you said, I think that's what made it unique is the fact that, you know, they just encourage people to sign up and join in and you know, just have fun with it. And the way I kind of described it to people, I was getting people to come and sign up and talk about it, was it's kind of like it's a charity tournament with a bit of an attitude, but in a good way. Like, it's not your average, like, timid, just, oh, come along and just see what happens. It's like, no, you've got to be prepared to have a laugh and have a giggle. And there's some really, it's good-natured banter, but, you know, it is banter in there. It's a lot of chat, a lot of good people.
It's a lot of people having fun. Yeah, there was.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think what makes it special is it's one that if you just, and I think it was, what I love about it is it came at such an important time because it was that point where we went out of lockdown and we went back in the lockdown and then, you know, and then it was a bit like we were all a bit unsure about what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And it just took your minds off it. And I think that's what made the tournament special. But, you know, I couldn't second it enough. Just the spirit of it is just phenomenal. Yeah. So before we tell people where they can sign up, what is going to be different? Come on, let's have it out. What's going to be different in 2021? You mentioned there's going to be double the amount of teams, 480 people. So that's
hopefully.
Hopefully there will be. Yeah. There will be 480 people. For hook or by crook, we'll get them there. But what else is there going to be? Are we going to see any differences to scoring or format, or is there anything that you can semi sort of hint at without maybe giving the game away? Like one of those. Not spoilers, but like little inkling teasers.
We've had some chats, haven't we, Greg? We've had some chats about scoring. The tight end premium, I think, made a big difference. That made it a little bit more interesting. It certainly made the scoring a little bit more intriguing. So I don't know whether we expand that a little more. I mean, Sleeper have added a lot of things over the off-season, haven't they? They've added lots and lots and lots of different bits that, you know, different types of leagues as well, but they're adding more bits every day. So the more interested we can make the scoring, similar to Scott Fish, you know, the more interested in the scoring, the more the serious players get out of it and the more the amateurs learn as well, actually. So yeah, we might tweak the scoring a little bit. I think the interesting thing last year was that we started to expand into little offshoot leagues. Like I did my first guillotine league and I did the first three guillotine leagues and I did, you know, these other weird leagues I've never even heard of before. And they were great. They were nuts. They were absolutely bonkers, but they were really, really interesting. So yeah.
You wait to the league I've invited Greg to, which is a bit of a private.
Is it fruity?
Is
it fruity?
Yeah. Let's just say it's unlike anything you'll ever play.
You're going to get sent a manuscript through the post with the rules and it's going to thud onto your onto your floor.
Oh, yeah.
No.
No, it's not that long. It's not that long. But it is something that is requiring some reading because it's different.
It's going to be fun. Well, Boss, is there any official teasers we can give Boss?
Not as such. I think the big thing is going to be, as you say, we're going to double up. So 480 teams, the hope will therefore be that we can double up what we raised. We raised 10 grand last year. If we could raise 20 grand this year, that would be unbelievable. But hopefully we can if we double up the numbers. So yeah, if double the numbers, that's probably going to mean double the divisions. So we had 20 divisions last year, so there'll be 40 this year. And I think for the most part, it's not going to be massive changes. It'll be tweaks around the edges in terms of how the playoffs work and the scoring bits and pieces and just things that we learned from last year. Because to be fair, as I said at the start, I'd not played in a league with more than 12 people before last year. So we were completely flying by the seat of our pants.
It didn't look like you were. So if that helps.
Behind the scenes, it did. Behind the scenes, it did.
It's that duck on the pond. All looks calm.
Yeah.
Just shove another video out. People think we know what we're doing.
Distract them with Karate Kid. Come on.
Exactly. Buy us some time while I faff about with this spreadsheet and figure out what to do.
For those listening, you know, with charity leagues, because you know, one thing I did love is that, you know, you some charity leagues, including the one that I run, is kind of voluntary. You know, we don't charge if people don't want to give, but we do encourage. You kind of made sure that people did donate and you didn't get a spot until you did donate. Which is great, I think, because obviously that's how you got to the number, and people were very generous and people did more than the donation fee, which is also great to see. But where did the money go? What were the charities? Because they weren't just your typical Mind or Cancer UK. You know, you deliberately picked personalized causes, which I've really loved.
Absolutely, yeah, and that was it. And that was part of the rationale behind it at the start was, as I said, a lot of because of everything that happened over the last 12 months, it was going to be a lot of the smaller charities that would end up missing out that are so reliant on local events, not just things like the London Marathon, but we mentioned that the small, low-key coffee mornings and those sorts of things that couldn't happen and were going to miss out. So we wanted to try and support some of those. And yeah, we wanted to try and make it as mandatory as possible to get people to donate so we could generate as much as we could. There was a couple of charities. One was one that's local to me here. So it's a children's hospice called Bluebell Wood, which is about 10 minutes down the road from where I live. So they provide sort of end of life palliative respite care for terminally ill kids, basically, and their families. As I say, they do incredible work. They're about 10 minutes down the road. My wife has done a bit of volunteering stuff there in the past. So I sort of chose them as the first charity. And then we had another charity that's down near where Foley is.
Yeah, the other one is Love Rome, which are basically a local kind of Birmingham-based charity that they act as the safety net for people who fall through the cracks of society, really. So they help the underprivileged, really. So underprivileged children, underprivileged adults, the homeless. They basically act where people need it. And it's been really difficult for them because they've had a real lack of funding. As you can imagine, they've not been able to do any real events at all, live events where they can raise actual money. So the last 12 months, you know, I've been chatting to them in the last couple of months because we're obviously retaining them as the charity for this year as well. And they can't tell me how important it's been to have this kind of influx of funds that they weren't expecting. That's just made a massive difference to the people local to me, really. So it's one of those things. It massively changes lives that you'll probably never know. You'll probably never meet the people it changes their lives, but it really does. And it's just great to know that some people are that generous that they do it. And throughout the season, we saw this as well, Greg, didn't we? That we were nearing we kept moving the target up and up. And the closer we got to, you know, a milestone like nine grand or 10 grand, the more that people wanted to donate. So like the Guillotine Leagues and the other things that we did completely ad hoc and off the cuff, people were throwing money in, saying, straight, let me in there. I'll give you 20 quid. I'll give you 30 quid. Just let me in there. And, you know, the generosity of the fantasy football community is incredible. We had no idea it existed. Never mind. It was so generous and you know, inclusive and community-based. It absolutely blew our minds, didn't it? How many times have we just sat back and were like, people are just chucking money at this because it's a great cause, but they also just want to be involved. And it's just exactly. It's just good. It's great to see.
As you say, when we got to that near that 10,000, that people saying, oh, people were contacting me saying, can we do another guillotine?
Can we
do something just so we can get you guys past that landmark and stuff like this? And so, it was very cool. Very cool. Unexpected.
Just phenomenal. Like, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think there is some really negative elements to the fantasy football community. Sometimes it gets a bit incestuous. Sometimes it gets a bit pernickety with takes and things like that. But inherently, I think most people in this community are phenomenal. And the money that gets raised every single year, and it's a shout out to a person like Scott Fish, who really was the pioneer of this. You know, not just with Scott Fish Bowl, but everything he does, every league has a charity element to it. And yeah, you know, his big thing is, you know, make every league you can have some form of charity element to it, whether it's even just kicking $20 to or 20 quid to charity. And I think the money you raised is phenomenal. So where can people sign up? Where can people, you know, they've been listening to this now for the last 15, 20 minutes. They like the sound of it. They really want a Kirk Sloan video made in their honor. So where can they actually sign up and have a chance to enter this wonderful tournament and try and, well, not try, we'll lose to someone like myself next year. And Foley. Foley's a finalist as well. But beat Greg. But beat Greg, you know.
Everyone, you just need to get on Greg and beat Greg. Come on.
Everyone beat me last year.
And he actually still claims that it's because he didn't want people to think there was corruption at the top. He still claims it, and it's not true. He was just bad.
He's no H.
No.
But yeah, so you can follow us on Twitter. Obviously, we're at Warrior Bowl on Twitter, so we're putting stuff on there about. We'll post all the videos on there and those sorts of things as and when they come out, and there's information on there about what's going on. But so the main hub for all the information is just warriorbowl.com. So on there, it's got all the details. It's got all the archived information from last season. So you can see the full leaderboard. You can see all the division winners, all the finalists, or the ultimate fantasy football warrior. So that the overall champion, all that's sort of archived on there. But then there's also the sort of the rules on there, how it works, and most importantly, the sign-up form is on there. So all you have to do is fill that in, submit your form. You don't have to sort of donate or pay anything or anything like that at this point. You're just signing up, and then invites start going out around July. And then, drafts will be sort of August time. But yeah, last year we were significantly oversubscribed at 240. So hopefully we're going to be significantly oversubscribed again this year at 480. We're already at about 250 signups, I think, so far, which that's is pretty amazing. Cool, considering that's more than what we had compete last year. So yeah, warriorbowl.com, go on there, all the information is there, sign up. Yeah, get involved.
Definitely do. It's a phenomenal tournament. Like I said, the only reason I can say I'm confidently going to be there because all the finalists got a spot to Warrior Bowl 2021. Warrior Bowl. Is it Warrior Bowl 2021? That's what we're called. Is that what it's been called? Or is it Warrior Bowl 2?
Yes. 2021.
Good. Okay. Just thought I'd check
that. Yeah, the only people that are definitely in so far are the division, basically everyone that won their own division and the finalists. So they got an automatic invite back to defend their crown as division champions.
It's a good job. You definitely want to let me back in. I'm serious. You would have left me out just out of spite.
Just for entertainment value. But yeah, they're the only people that are in so far. Everyone else is in the pot for when those start sending out the invites in July. So.
Brilliant. So look, let's talk outside of Warrior Bowl. Let's talk a little bit about your 2020 fantasy football. Any league titles? Anything to celebrate either together or separately? Because I don't know if you co-own teams, but did you have any successes you want to shout about on here, or any parting shots to some of your league mates?
I got to the final of Warrior Bowl. I'm very proud of that. You know, I'm going to leave it there.
Yeah,
that's it.
You were conference champion.
Sword conference. Now we started we started two dynasty leagues last year, didn't we?
We did.
We started two of that, and I got to the semis of one, and I blew the other one up after week two. So that tells you the old swings and roundabouts of fantasy football there. Semi-finals, blew it up after week two, and I really blew that one up because that was terrible. But we've got a home league that we redraft that we played in for what, 4, 5, 6 years, for many years now, haven't we? And I got to the semis of that, which was it three? Did you win it? You won it year one, didn't you?
Two.
Year two. Yeah, and I got to the semis of that, which I always seem to get to the semis and get beat, which is terrible. But yeah, no real wins except for the Warrior Bowl. I'm sticking with that. On so brand.
My 2020 fantasy was the single worst season I've had in fantasy football in like the 15, 16 years I've been playing fantasy football. It was results wise, it was abysmal across the board. Contrasted though, it was at the most fun I've had in any year playing fantasy football. So it was the most enjoyable year, but it was terrible when it came to results. So,
who's your most drafted player? Say his name.
Last year,
yeah,
Fournette.
Of course he was, yeah. And that's why.
Which tells his own story.
You took him everywhere.
Do you know what's funny? I have never drafted Leonard Fournette.
Oh, wow. You're missing out. Oh, yeah.
I've missed out on that roller coaster. Yeah. And,
Lombardi Lenny.
Yeah. I mean, I love him. Hey, now.
You like him. You like him now, then, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, I've made some very strong opinions of Leonard Fournette over the years on here. Noodle legs, because his legs are made of noodles. I said famously, I think my famous quote that people still decide to throw in my face is, I wouldn't draft him earlier than the ninth round in any league. And now he's probably worth about a ninth round pick.
How loud did you scream when he pulled off that monster run?
Oh, I love him. He's now like how my loud? Favorite. He's now my favorite player. No, I do like him. Like, listen, I think the thing is I can emotionally detach real life NFL and fantasy football. Like I have a complete detachment. I've also made very famous quotes on here. I would trade my mother for an evening in exchange for a trade that worked out that would lead me to a title, and I stand by that. But I think it's, yeah, I have that detachment, and it is what it is, but I still wouldn't draft Lenny Fournette even now. I still don't think I'm going to have any Lenny shares anywhere. I end up having a team once and I inherited him, and the first thing I did was trade him. Like, I just, it's not because I hate him, it just, he's not worth wherever anyone drafts him. It's like Patrick Mahomes.
I won't have him anywhere this year.
No.
You still have, haven't you?
Well, and on a couple of dynasty rosters where he's still kicking around, but to be fair, in every league that I had him, he was like my third or fourth running back. So it wasn't like I was like taking him super early.
I look at your dynasty. Do you remember when we looked at your dynasty rosters the other night and your running back rooms made me lie on the floor and cry in a ball? you had Chris Carson and then a blank space, and then I kept looking down and I couldn't find anyone else. And that was it.
It's because I traded away Dalvin Cook.
You don't have any picks.
I think not for picks. I traded him for AJ Brown.
You've got no running backs.
That seems a rebuild, doesn't it?
The true believer that running backs don't matter. Love it.
This is the guy. This is your guy.
So what takeaways do you have from last year to either replicate successes or make sure that you don't have the same season you had last year?
I'm allergic to running backs who turn 25. I have to get rid of them. I have to get rid of them straight away. I know there's been a couple of outliers. There's been Mike Davis. There's been McKissic, who both helped me a lot in Warrior Bowl, actually, in redraft. But it's specifically with Dynasty, anybody who even turns 25, I'll get rid of them. Get rid of them straight away. Because you might get a little bit of production, but you just won't get any value.
So does that include people that will turn 25 during the season, or are you just going to let them finish the season?
You might get rid of them after week four when they've absolutely gone nuts. You know what I mean? And you get peak value then. You know, so yeah, I can't handle running backs who turn 25. I think that'll serve me well.
I thought you were going to say that you are a full on tight end convert.
I am.
Because you hated tight end before last season, and now you're.
I did. I discovered tight end premium.
okay, that's fine. I was about to say,
oh yeah,
that's fine. If you love tight ends because you play tight end premium, and therefore it has a lot more meaning to you because you play that tight end premium, I'm with you 100%.
Yeah.
If you were just talking about in a standard scoring format or even PPR, and you became a lover of the tight end position, I think
no, I've got no tight ends. I mean, my half PPR tight end rosters start with Hayden Hurst, end with Blake Jarwin. Yeah. What are you gonna do?
Yeah. There's a section of the fantasy football playbook where I talk about tight ends this year. And basically there's one tight end that is worth drafting in the first 10 rounds.
Yeah. Well, the Dynasty league that we started this year, the Immortals, I've got Kittle, Kelsey, and Gesicki, I think, or someone else. So I've got those three as my tight end room, and that's tight end premium. I'm more than happy with that. That'll do me. I'll take Pitts if I can get him.
Who's my tight end room? Jared Cook.
Oh no.
Well, he's moved to San Diego or LA now.
He'll be all right.
That's what I talk about. Jack Doyle, Anthony Firkser, Blake Jarwin.
No.
I paid like next to nothing for these guys, so I'm quite happy. Cool. So let's talk about the NFL draft. We kind of had a little preamble. We talked about how bad Kadarius Toney is. We don't need to go there anymore because at least we're all in agreement there, which is good. But let's talk about who, in your eyes, were, in NFL terms, the big winners and losers of the draft. Any particular drafts that you walked away with thinking, I think they smashed it, and anyone you felt particularly didn't have a good draft?
Bears won, didn't they? I think the Bears won. You know, they were right up there anyway. I mean, getting Fields, who could be a completely transitional quarterback, could take them to the next level, really. And the strength of the O-line, so they actually got on the line to actually throw behind as well. If he's as good as people say, the Bears could actually be that team that they've wanted to be for the last 20 years, right?
Yeah.
So for me, them. And I think the other one, I've got Gibson in like three leagues. And that little snippet that came out just before the draft that they were going to draft a running back scared the life out of me. So the fact that they didn't, I'm taking Gibson as a big winner.
Yeah, I agree.
For me, yeah.
Greg?
I think, yeah, obviously Bears is an obvious one. I think the Lions got, that's the result for them to get Saul to drop to them. Yeah. That's a big result from the first round. I think in terms of players, I think you mentioned him already, Kyle Trask, couldn't have asked to land in a better spot. That's literally like the perfect place for him to land. Like, he's just going to sit behind the GOAT for a year, maybe two. We'll see what happens. So he's got the best possible person he could learn from. There's no pressure on him. He's got a good offensive-minded coach. There's a ton of talent on that roster.
Yeah.
There's going to be a job become vacant in the next year or 2 years. I mean, he couldn't have asked for a more perfect spot. If ever there was a chance for him to go on to be a successful NFL quarterback, that's it. He's in the perfect place for it. So I think he's a massive winner.
Yeah, I agree with that. So I was on Nat Coombs' show on TalkSport yesterday about this. And if you haven't listened, have a chance, download the app, the TalkSport app, and you can listen to it. It's Going Global with Nat Coombs, and it's 2 hours and 25 minutes in. I mean, for sort of 12 or so minutes. And I talked about that because I got asked about the pick, and I think, you know, I don't think Arians is there when he gets the job. I think it's going to go to Leftwich. I think it's a continuity plan, the thinking about it, but it's the perfect offense for Trask because he's not a runner. He's not a dual threat quarterback. And in the Arians system, you don't have to be. If you look at the quarterbacks that have played in that system, none of them have been particularly wonderful with their legs. And they don't have to be because it's schemed open for them. As long as they're intelligent, they're accurate, and they make the right decisions. It's all about decision-making, which is why Jameis Winston was not good in that. Well, I mean, he was great. I mean, he threw for over 5,000 yards, but he also
had a
touchdown. As a season goes, it's probably one of the more entertaining seasons a quarterback's ever going to have. I did enjoy the quip that someone made on Twitter that basically, if I wanted to watch 32 picks in 3 hours on my draft was Jameis Winston play.
Which is accurate.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I think Kyle Trask was, as you say, I think he was a big winner. I think for me, I'm similar to you. I think the Bears had a great draft. I think the Patriots had a good draft. I actually think the sneaky one for me was the Browns.
Yeah.
The Browns did a phenomenal job. They got really good. For me, I look at them now and think, that's a Super Bowl challenging roster now, because of what they had and then filling the vacancies the way that they did. I thought they did a phenomenal job. So, you know, I put them up, and I think the Chargers as well. They got their three biggest needs just all fell to them. It was like their tailor-made draft. Yeah. I mean, like, literally all the chaos around them, and it was like, this is the dream. They were laughing their heads off. And I think there were some good drafts all around. What about bad drafts? Who had a real stinker of a draft that they might struggle to recover from?
Giants.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for the support.
I don't think the Giants was that bad. I don't think overall, actually.
I don't think it was a terrible.
It's not the Texans, is it?
No. Well, let's talk about this then. We've got this on, right? So they don't pick for two rounds. They get to the third round, and you're thinking here, well, there's a lot going on with the Texans. They've signed 480-odd free agents. They literally turned it into the cast of the Replacements, and they're going to hold an open tryout that's going to rival something that you'd see on The X Factor, with clearly going to be different stages. This is how it's in my head. They get a pick, and they take Davis Mills. Now, I love Davis Mills. Don't get me wrong. I've been banging the drum for Davis Mills. He's actually who I did want Tampa to take. I can see why they went Trask, and I support that. But I'd be banging the drum for Davis Mills. I think Davis Mills is a guy that, in the right situation, the right offense, could have been a real outside. Like, for me, he was in that. He could have gone on to be like the next Dak Prescott. And
he's got a chance.
Well, in that offense, I'm not so sure.
He's got a chance in 2-3 years, maybe.
But let's talk about this. Why would Houston take a quarterback, but their first pick? They haven't got a load of picks. Mm. First pick they get, and they take a quarterback. That to me is fascinating. I mean, I'm not trying to read too much into it, but how can you not? I think it's. What do you guys think? If you're sitting there thinking, you know, as a Texan, your first pick's at a quarterback. And you signed one in the preseason. It's not like you didn't have anyone behind him. You got Tyrod Taylor there.
Yeah, they're a terrible organization, aren't they? So,
yeah, but this is a new era. You got Nick Caserio over from the Patriots. I mean, I don't know. To me, that's there's some alarm bells for me there. Thinking like,
yeah, they've got
Watson's not going to play this year, or at least he's not going to play a significant amount, because I don't get why you would. And I think they're potentially thinking like he might never play again.
Yeah, I mean, their roster looks just awful, doesn't it? I mean, it's just, there's nothing on there that gets you excited. I mean, the fact that JJ Watt's gone now, and he's getting on a bit, wasn't he? But he was still exciting. He still had a bit of heart, you know, he had a bit of, you know, connection with the fans and that type of thing. But they've got nobody on that roster now that you get excited about, have they?
Well, I like their running back room. I love their running back. It's old. But
Ingram and DJ.
Well, and Philip Lindsay. I mean, that's a good running back room. I mean, like, for what it is, considering you might have a quarterback out there who might not throw in Tyrod Taylor, that's a decent running back room. Like, that's an above average running back room for me.
We're almost older than us.
Well, yeah. I mean,
and we're old.
Let's make it yourself. I'm only 23.
I think that's the point. That's the point, though, isn't it? They've got so many issues, and they've got so many gaps in that roster. For them to then go and take a quarterback with their first pick, having not picked in the first two rounds, just screams the fact that they're assuming they don't have Watson.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, then there's a couple of different reasons that could be.
Probably legal.
It screams the fact that they're not expecting to have him in the near future. So, they're thinking about, okay, where do we start again? And again, you might be reading too much into that, and we might be applying it more logic to that scenario than the Texans have deserved us to apply to a situation in recent years. But that's the obvious assumption, isn't it? But
I've got enough Brandon Cooks to hope for the best. I've got enough Brandon Cooks to hope for the best. Come on.
We'll talk about Nico Collins as well in a bit, because I thought that pick was fascinating as well. But I think the Texans is an interesting one. The other real head scratcher for me, surprisingly, was the Jags. I just didn't get some of the moves that they made. I didn't get Etienne at 25.
No, don't mind.
I didn't get what they did at the top of the second. I felt like they had the opportunity there to build the trenches. They had so many picks to build the trenches. Of course, you take Lawrence 101. Who doesn't take Lawrence 101? Fine. Take Lawrence at the first pick. No problem.
Yeah.
Why don't you build the lines? Take an edge. They missed that huge edge run at the end of the first round. And they went from getting a borderline blue chip edge rusher to not getting one. And I just think you can't make those kinds of mistakes. So I think, surprisingly for me, they were someone who I felt could have done better. What was for you all the worst pick of the draft? If you could just pick one and say, that's the worst pick.
Giants.
Thanks, mate. I think I get why they made the pick, but I also think it's a mistake, and it's arguably somebody that I think it makes Joe Burrow a winner and a loser, and it's the Chase pick. I don't get why you haven't taken Sewell at that point. I understand, like, Chase is fantastic. You can't protect the guy that you've just invested a huge amount in last year. He ended up in the hospital. You've got the opportunity to get a fantastic tackle that could be there for the next 10 years, and you pair the two of them together, and you don't take it. Admittedly, you take a very good player in Chase, but
I think, is this where you say the biggest loser in the draft is Joe Burrow's other knee?
Yeah, basically. Right. But yeah, I get why they went that way, because Chase is great, but I just think it's
I don't necessarily buy into it that much. I mean, yeah, it's one of those, like, anyone can get the knee blown out, and they've got a couple of people coming back, haven't they? You know, and they've got a couple of people getting older, and they did take a couple, and yeah, it's one of those things, you know. It's a risk. If you're the GM, it's a risk, because that could be your career gone, right, if you made the wrong decision. But if you look at that in a vacuum, and if you get rid of all the noise, the fact you've got him, his favourite target from back in the day, who's now brought into this, and you've got that wide receiver room, you're giving him every chance to succeed. And if you've got enough in front of him, I get it. I would have done the same. I think that makes a lot of sense.
I think we've seen enough examples in the recent years of quarterbacks, potentially good quarterbacks, coming into the league and just being ruined one way or another by not being protected.
It's risky business, though, isn't it? Anyone can get done in the knee. It can happen any time.
Of course it can, but you increase the chances if you let your quarterback get hit however many ridiculous amount of times.
Which were far too many.
He got hit last year. Like, look at Darnold. Darnold may not have ever been a great quarterback, but he certainly wasn't helped by the fact that he was put in a horrible situation. Andrew Luck is obviously the most obvious person there.
He had a good line.
Injuries. To the end, he had a good line. He didn't have a good line at the start.
He had a good line for a couple of years, and then went low.
Lee made a good point with Ryan Tannehill. He had a terrible situation. I think is a good point. I think
Tannehill at the Dolphins, yeah.
I mean, there's a few teams when you look at the situations they've had, and they have been absolutely terrible. And some have not had the opportunity to see. I think Josh Rosen at Arizona.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a few players you look at, and, you know, it's potentially ended careers. But I think the one thing I would say is I can half defend the pick only because of you've picked the best receiver in the class. Like, it's not like you've passed on a tackle and you've picked, like, or a position that isn't going to add to the win-loss column. I mean, it could backfire, but if it doesn't backfire, if Joe Burrow somehow survives and doesn't get an injury, then that pick wins. That's my take on it. I mean, I can think of worse picks than that. I would have said Alex Leatherwood.
A lot of people said mine. That.
But having said that, they end up saving that pick by getting Moehrig in the second round.
Yeah.
And if you were to reverse them on paper and say, right, well, they picked Moehrig in the first and Leatherwood in the second, you wouldn't be slating it. You'd sit there and go,
I don't know.
Maybe it's a slight reach on Leatherwood, but if he was a second round pick and not first, it wouldn't have got the press it had. They got a first round player in the second, and they got a late second / third round player in the second round or in the first round. But it's kind of all balanced out. Like, I think you can almost, I think the Raiders got away with one there.
I think the criticism is, though, you could have got both of those players and you could have got a fourth rounder or a fifth rounder, right? If you're a really good GM and you work in the room, you work in the system, you could have had both of those players and someone else. But they didn't.
That's not what they do, though. That isn't what they do. And I think that is what it is. I think there was a lot of interesting picks, and we'll see what really happens over the coming years. But I thought the interesting ones for me were the Broncos not taking a QB at 9.
Yeah.
I said this in the immediate reaction pod that I felt they're in the market for someone. They're in the market for a quarterback now. Whether that's
not getting Rodgers, though, are they? They're not getting Rodgers.
I can't see it, but look, they must think there's a chance. They must think there's a chance, because that's why you don't draft one. And I think Jimmy Garoppolo is the backup. I think he is like the, if all else fails, we'll go shove something towards Jimmy Garoppolo. Because, of course, you can get him now. So I think they realised they could probably get Jimmy at any point.
He's not better than Teddy.
Yeah, I think he's better than Teddy. I think absolutely he is. Yeah,
by a lot.
Yeah.
By a lot.
I think a significant amount. And I think the difference is, I think Jimmy Garoppolo took a team to the Super Bowl 2 years ago. People forget that.
I think Shanahan took him to the Super Bowl.
I mean, people can sit there and say that, but the quarterback can easily lose games. He didn't lose them games. I think that's the difference. Is I look at Teddy Bridgewater and I think he can win games, he can lose games.
Yep.
With Garoppolo, I get his upside is very low. He's not spectacular. He's not a Pro Bowl elite quarterback. I get he's like the average, the line of average draw. He is there.
Yeah.
But the one thing with Jimmy Garoppolo is I don't think he loses you games. I don't think he gets to the point where he's making horrific decision making. He's not making bad throws. He just doesn't make exciting throws. He's boring, but
yeah,
it works out.
The guy who doesn't lose the guy who doesn't lose your games is the guy who gets you the Super Bowl, doesn't win it.
And that is an example of what happens. But if you're Denver, would you take a Super Bowl trip over where you've been the last 5 years?
They want a Super Bowl win though.
Look at the receivers that they've got in that offense though. You don't need Patrick Mahomes. Yeah. To make the offense and be successful. Yeah, if you did.
You had Watson. Everyone
would like Patrick Mahomes, wouldn't they? Everyone would like it, but it's not how it works.
But Mahomes is coming off losing a Super Bowl. It's not the end all be all. It's all the pieces, but ultimately the quarterback has got to be the person that controls the environment. And I think Garoppolo does that. You know, I can point to Shanahan's play calling in the Super Bowl being more of a reason than Jimmy Garoppolo not winning the Super Bowl. And I'm not a big Jimmy Garoppolo lover here. I'm just thinking out loud. Like I look as Greg's saying, I look at that roster and think, if you just had someone who can make good decisions and put the ball in the right places and just be a bit of a leader in that offense. We saw what he did when he moved over from the 49ers. They were a joke organization. He runs off 5 straight wins. The following season, he takes them to the Super Bowl. You know, it's just injuries and durability. That's the biggest question with him. And it's the same with Teddy. But we'll see what happens. But, you know, they might get a Rodgers. They might get they might even be in the market for Watson if there's a market for him.
I think they'd be there, wouldn't they?
So I thought that was a strange one. But
yeah,
let's pivot from the draft for a minute here because I know when we were speaking about coming on, Greg, you wanted to give away a spot to the Warrior Bowl. So we just talked about the Warrior Bowl and people can sign up. But what about people who, you know, we have got this spot. So how can people go ahead and win this spot?
Absolutely, yeah. So, we as I said before, the only people that have got an invite so far are the division champions and the finalists. So these are the first invites that we'll be giving out outside of that. So for that, there is a pinned tweet on the Warrior Bowl Twitter account, which has details of all the of what the Warrior Bowl is, how it works, and all that sort of stuff. So we're going to give away, we're actually going to give away two places. So what you need to do, you need to retweet that pinned tweet. You need to be following both us and 5 Yard Rush. And you then need to, because we want this to be for people that have watched or listened to this, to show that you've done, we want you to put a specific hashtag, reply with the hashtag, which Murph very generously came up with the hashtag of setting the Tony spell in the way of Kadarius. thank you very much for that.
Shade, low-level shade.
Exactly. So in essence, what we want you to do, if you've already signed up on the Warrior Bowl website, great. If you haven't, go and sign up and then retweet that pinned tweet, be following the both of us and reply on there saying #setting the Tony. And then we know that you've signed up.
I tell you what, Foley, you're not the only marketing genius in the room here.
a little bit of shade thrown Greg's way works wonders.
Exactly, and also an opportunity to throw some shade at me, so thanks very much.
You're welcome. Well, it wasn't so much setting, it wasn't that. I just thought it was a clever play on words, setting the tone. Setting yourself.
Happy coincidence.
This is the one in the end you drafted him. It was like a mixing bowl and it just came out.
Love it.
Mixologist.
So we'll have, so there'll be two places, two invites. So there'll be 48 hours from now, effectively, to go to do that. We'll do two invites, but we'll also, for every, so we'll do two invites irrespective. Then if we get to 20 people entering, doing the setting, the Tony and all that sort of stuff, we'll make it three. And if we get to 40, we'll make it four. 50 will make it five. So the more people you get out there signing up, retweeting, the better your chances of getting in. So we'll add an extra invite for every 10 people that retweet and do all the stuff that I said before.
There every retweet is another knife into your heart. Fabulous. Yeah,
Let's do it.
I love it. So why do we say close a play? Because this will go out, I think it'll probably go out on the podcast Tuesday. So let's say till end of play Thursday. That gives everyone, and then that, maybe you might announce the winners Friday, and that gives, you know, people a good little Friday feeling to it. So you've got to close the play Thursday the 6th of May, depending on when you're listening to this. If you listen to this a week from now, I don't know why, but I appreciate you listening, but you would have missed out on this spot. But yeah, hashtag setting the Tony, retweet their pinned tweet. And again, tell all your friends, because that will just increase your chances of getting in. So the more people that enter this, the more people who can have a chance. So awesome stuff. Quick one. We've got about 7-8 minutes left here to talk about the NFL draft for fantasy football. So breakthrough, who is, you know, right now, some rookies who have jumped up your boards over the weekend as a result of the NFL draft that either you were low on or as a result of the weekend and the landing spot, you've just got so excited, you're all in. And it doesn't have to be Kadarius Toney, Greg. It's okay, we'll let you.
Thanks, mate.
Go on, Greg. You go first. Tell us about Kadarius Toney. Go on.
So I think the NFL draft is fantastic. The worst thing about the NFL draft is when there's guys that you like that you're generally higher than the consensus on, and then they land in a really good spot and all of a sudden their ADP skyrockets. Mm. And you think, well, I liked them before and I was getting them really cheap, but now they're going to go much higher. So I think two guys that fall into that camp for me are Carter landing at the Jets. Seems to have shot up ADP, and Trey Sermon at San Francisco, both of which are guys that I liked before, and you were getting Carter sort of middle of the second, you were getting Sermon in the third. Carter's now the mocks that I've done in the last couple of days, Carter's end of the late first, early second, Sermon's sort of early to mid second. So they've not necessarily earlier. Exactly, they've not necessarily gone up my board. They were quite high on my board anyway, but generally speaking, they've gone up quite a lot, which is incredibly frustrating for me, but there we go.
Yeah, Trey Sermon the same for me. I mean, Jared Doakes, I think, has just gone from nowhere to rather interesting now, only because there's nobody else in Miami except for the 7th round pick from last year, Gaskin. So there's a little bit of interest there. But I think the one for me is Elijah Moore, which is just a bit exciting. I mean, he was a bit exciting anyway, wasn't he, for Jets fans, for seeing him land there, now knowing what he can do. But yeah, I've got a little bit of a liking for Elijah Moore now, if we can get him in drafts. I'm not sure where I'm going to get him. It's probably still going to be early second, I think. Early to mid second. And I've got quite a few. Is it going to be late first? Is it?
You reckon? I think when you look at some of the new landing spots for people, I think some people are going to fade. I think you're looking end of the first.
You reckon?
Even a bit higher. I just think that landing spot's going to appeal to people, because if you look at certain players, you know, these are the sorts of players we're talking about, players are good now. Rashad Bateman has just fallen off people's boards because of that landing spot.
Yeah.
I think he's almost a value based on if you can get him at the tail end of the first. I think he's a value. You talk about the situation, the volume. I talked about it on Friday, but I still think there's some value there. Rondell Moore, another great landing spot. There's a few that you just that were on that fringe area there. Toney, people aren't going to like that because of the volume. He's not going to get behind Slayton and Shepard and Golladay. He was one that maybe people were more, I mean, he was well down on my board. I mean, it was him and Jalen Darden were kind of next to each other, and
Well, Jalen Darden was at the top anyway, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was close to it. Yeah. I had him much higher than consensus. I think I had him as like wide receiver 10 or something like that.
Do you like Rondale Moore at the Cards? Do you like Rondale Moore at the Cards?
No. No. Because they're just not going to. I mean, it's Hopkins, and then it's everyone else is going to eat some scraps.
Yeah.
I think he'll do all right, but he doesn't excite me. Tylan Wallace is someone whose draft capital just died. And as a result, I think he's someone that slides down boards. So all of a sudden, you got all these guys who are potentially around or ahead with Elijah Moore. He'll go right up the board.
I think
some people will be bullish and take him 3, 4.
I think Moore is another one, guy that I liked, and I had him. Like, he was probably one of my. I don't do my rankings or anything like that, but he was probably in that sort of top five receivers that I liked coming into this draft. And he's another guy that's landed in a good spot, and his ADP is going to shoot up. And you're absolutely right with guys that are started to fall, and I think we'll cover up draft fallers shortly, but. Yeah, that some of those guys in the mock drafts and things like that, you're looking at it, the back end of that first round was all guys like Bateman, Waddle, Wallace, Smith. And a load of those guys are going to start fading and dropping back out into the early second. Mm. And people like Moore are going to drift up. People like Moore and Carter and those sorts of guys are going to start to come up and end up in the late first round.
Let me ask you a question. Because I've got, I said the same chat, but Zach Wilson seems to be being pushed down and down and down and down and down. He is the most unsexy Superflex QB rookie pick right now. He's going way down. Like, you're getting him mid, towards the end of the first round even. But if you've got Elijah Moore as this kind of like, I'm going to take him end of the first round, maybe even mid first round, but Zach Wilson's getting really faded. How does that come together? Because there's a lot of hate for Zach Wilson right now. Denzel Mims? Crowder's still there?
Crowder's dead.
Crowder's
finished. The way that they're going to line up there, Crowder is finished. I tweeted out on Saturday. My pick was he was going to go to Detroit, and I think he goes. He's going to get too much money. He's going to get cut. Because they'll make a cap saving. Because the way that they're going to line up, they're going to do a lot more 12 personnel. They'll line up with two tight ends to give extra protection to. And then this is also part of the Shanahan scheme. They're just not going to chuck the ball to a guy like Crowder. He's not going to get 150 targets. It's not going to happen. So you got Mims, who didn't really do much year one. Moore, on the other hand, is...
No one did.
Yeah, of course not. Well, but at the end of the day, he's not got competition for targets. You know, you look at Rondale Moore, he's got competition for targets. You look at Kadarius Toney, he's got competition for targets. You look at someone like Elijah Moore, what's their path to 100 targets next year? Mm. What's in his way?
I've got two words for you. What? Kenny Yeboah.
Yeah.
we did
have a question about this. So we had a question from Martin, Lucky Fantasy Guy, who said, can I ask a couple of questions? How fantasy relevant will Kenny Yeboah be?
Titan one.
I did see this question on number one. On Twitter, and I feel that, Foley, this was... Martin made this question specifically as a way to throw shade at me and
I think he did.
Your Yeboah take and my inadvertent drafting of Saquon Barkley on our on our Guillotine live stream mock draft that we did last year.
Yeah. Yeah, he was throwing shade there, wasn't he? But Yeboah, Titan 1. Come on, Yeboah.
For the rationale in the room, tight ends in regular scoring don't overly matter all that much. In dynasty, tight end premium, I mean, like, throw a late dart, he's going to cost you nothing. But don't drop him. He could literally be anything. The map is, to put it in perspective, to be a tight end one in fantasy football, you need to catch 65 balls. 65 balls for 650 yards and about 6 or 7 TDs.
Yeah. Is it the post-hype breakout for Herndon then?
Listen, if I have to deal with another Chris Herndon season breakout, he didn't break out. I mean, he could do, but he didn't break out the first year, he didn't break out the second year, he didn't break out the third year. He is Chris Herndon 4, maybe for fourth time's a charm.
So do you like Wilson or not?
Well, Zach Wilson.
Hmm.
I think he's fine. He's not exciting. Here's my thought on him. And I said this on Friday. you can buy the Jets stack for virtually nothing.
Yeah.
So you can buy Wilson. You can buy Michael Carter slash Tevin Coleman. And you can buy either Mims or Moore. Take your pick. You can buy them for budget basement picks. And you've got yourself a cheap little stack as sort of on your bench. If they break out in this offense and become incredible, you're on to a winner.
Yeah, yeah.
If it doesn't, it's cost you nothing.
Yeah.
So will I be buying some Zach Wilson? Yeah, because he's so cheap. Like, he's so cheap. Like,
yeah.
He could be, the range of outcomes could be good. But am I going to be bullishly targeting him? No. Because I think there's just better. I mean, you get to a point with the saturation of quarterbacks, he's going to be in that saturation market of the decision will be, do I take him or do I take Sam Darnold? Or do I take Zach Wilson or do I take Teddy Bridgewater? Or do I take Zach Wilson or do I take David Carr or Derek Carr? But these are the kinds of decisions that we're talking about. In those situations, thinking of upside, I'll always take Zach Wilson because I know what I'm getting with the others, and I'm not interested because I know what I'm going
to get. You know what the ceiling is. What do you think? It's weird that he's gone at 102, though. Like, he's gone at 102. He's gone before Fields. He's gone before Lance.
I mean, they obviously have something in them that they like, and that's why they've done it. And they made the decision early. It was out public pretty early. Clearly, there's a lot to like. But, you know, some of the best QBs aren't overly fantasy relevant. I mean, Tom Brady, in his final years at New England, where he's winning Super Bowls, wasn't a massive fantasy relevant QB. He was kind of on the fringes of the QB.
I can QB one. Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, anyone who isn't a dual threat quarterback isn't really worth a significant investment unless there's someone spectacular who's going to throw for 40 touchdowns. Yeah. If they're not going to, you have to ask yourself, if I'm going to draft them as a starting quarterback, maybe Superflex is threshold lowers. Does he move? Yes or no? No. Right. Is he going to throw 40 touchdowns?
Is he Aaron Rodgers?
Basically, yeah. Is it Aaron Rodgers?
Or can he run?
Maybe someone, you know, Tom Brady's relevant because in that Arians offense, you can see 40 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on the fringes of 40 touchdowns, Kirk Cousins is kind of like that last statue guy that you can draft and say there's some relevance. But
Stafford, maybe?
Maybe Stafford. And then after that, you're kind of like, well, it doesn't really matter anymore. And Wilson is that guy who, if he ends up having a little bit of rushing ability, even if it's like 300, 400 yards, that will separate him from that pack a lot. Like, he'll all of a sudden separate away from there and become relevant. We don't know if he can do it yet or not. We've seen Justin Herbert was not a guy people thought would be particularly mobile and rushing.
He can run.
Exactly that. Daniel Jones is another. You know, we're talking about guys who no one thought had any real rushing ability, but these guys did. That's going to be a difference. I'd rather draft a player not knowing he can do it, thinking that there's a chance, than drafting a player who I know what I'm getting, and it is the floor.
Yeah. But he does look like he's 12.
Yeah. I mean, so Justin Herbert to his haircut.
Yeah.
I mean, Wilson did. He ran a bit, didn't he? In college. Yeah. He's not like he doesn't run like Justin Fields.
He ran a bit,
and actually, I liked when I watched the film that I watched of him. I liked his decision making on the read option. I think he very rarely got the decision wrong. He's not the extreme athlete that some of the other guys are, but he made good decisions on those read options. And in that sort of play, you don't need to be Lamar Jackson to pick up 5 to 10 yards. If you're making the right decision on that read guy, you can get yourself 5 to 10 yards. You've got to do that a couple of times a game, and you've got yourself a reasonable amount of yards on the ground as well. So I think he's kind of underrated in terms of his running ability.
Yeah. But
we shall see.
Yeah, I
could be value.
I mean, that's what I mean. I think he's a value. I don't think he's someone you should aggressively target. I'm not projecting him to be anything spectacular, but sometimes just I'd take a dart throw and see what you get. We've come up to sort of the end of the show now. As always, and as I kind of expected, we'll go over. But before we finish, give us your one spicy hot take for the 2021 season.
You want to go first? Sunshine.
Go for it, mate. Fill your boots.
Okay, I've got two. Because one is obvious, which is I will have Kenny Yeboah on every single fantasy team I have this year.
Love it.
Come on, Kenny Yeboah. The second one, I'm going to put money on and my picks on that I have this year in my rookie drafts that Trey Lance and Justin Fields will both end as QB1s.
Ooh.
I'm confident that they both will. They'll either start or they'll get in early. And the way those two play, they'll be QB1s. Might be back in QB1s for the first season, but I'm going to hopefully have a lot of them too.
Okay.
Spicy.
So I'm going to go with the guy that I mentioned earlier, and I'm going to say that Michael Carter will be the highest scoring rookie running back from a fantasy point perspective.
That is spicy.
Yeah, okay. I love it.
You said you wanted spicy, so...
You didn't disappoint.
That's Scotch Bonnet. That's Scotch Bonnet spicy.
Love that. There you go.
There we go.
They've ended with some heat. Brilliant. Fellas, thanks so much for coming on. Tell everyone in Rush Nation where they can find you, where they can interact with you on Twitter.
So I'm the @WarriorBowl Twitter account. And obviously, as you said, or as we mentioned before... If you go to the warriorbowl.com website, there's all the information on there about Warrior Bowl to sign up. The contest that we ran, the giveaway for the invites, the pin tweet on the @WarriorBowl Twitter account. That's the one you need to be retweeting. And remember the hashtag setting the Tony.
And I retweet everything these guys tweet. I'm @Folio and I just do dodgy 80s videos. Maybe 90, maybe computer game video soon. We will see. Might expand my repertoire.
I love it. Awesome. Well, look, fellas, appreciate you so much coming on and
brilliant, mate.
We'll have to get you back on. Don't forget, everyone here in Rush Nation, you do have 48 hours or a little over that to get those entries, potential spots into the Warrior Bowl. Do sign up anyway. It's a great cause, but you know, you can book a seat by sending that hashtag setting the Tony, and you could be one of the lucky winners that Greg pulls out of his magic hat on Friday. If it was a Giants hat, given it's Tony, that might even be acceptable. But look, appreciate you coming on, fellas. Yeah, we'll get you back on for sure. And, you know, do join in the tournament if you're listening to this late and you've missed out on the competition. It's still a good chance you can get in anyway, but sign up and that's going to give you the best chance possible to get in. But thanks from me, thanks from Lee behind the glass. Appreciate you tuning in, and until next time, Rush Nation, don't forget, keep rushing.
Can live a long, healthy life if you're HIV positive. With the current treatments, we can get patients down to being undetectable.
The array of options is so much greater today.
U equals U. Undetectable equals untransmittable. If someone who's HIV positive, they're taking their medication, they're undetectable, they're not able to pass HIV to their partners. Do it for you, Montgomery County.
Your HIV treatment is their prevention. Get more information at doitforumc.org.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.